So happy Father's Day, all of you in the room who are fathers. We want to bless you, and let me just give a little disclaimer before we go, that we're not disclaimer, an inclusionary statement, I should say. Yeah, no disclaimers. If you identify as a father because you're a biological father, because you're an adoptive father, because you're a father figure or a mentor, whether you are male or not male, I want to invite you to stand so we can bless you and wish you a happy Father's Day. All right, let's give them our best unity blessing. Together, fathers, we love you, we bless you, we appreciate you, and we behold the divine light within you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. A father is neither an anchor to hold us back, nor a sail to take us there, but a guiding light whose love shows us the way. I don't know who to credit with that. It's an anonymous quote, but it's beautiful, isn't it? So Susan Angelos does our Centerpoint Weekly every week, and she finds the most spot-on quotes. I don't know if you've noticed this. And it's called Centerpoint Weekly, so it's like every quote centers us and is right on point. I just think, well, true to its name, right? Over and over again. So big thanks to you, Susan, for providing us that every week. Yeah. Takes a village, doesn't it? So the quote, I feel like, is embodied by two father's stories that I'd like to highlight this morning. And the first one is the story of Ray Kimbrell. Ray was a proud U.S. Marine. And we often, or I often, and probably you do too, when we think of soldiers, you might think of people who sacrifice, right? Or who are willing to sacrifice, right? Willing to make sacrifices in their life, or maybe into sacrifice their very life for their country, for its well-being, for its protection, for whatever is deemed necessary. But Ray didn't see it like that. He saw being a Marine as a privilege. He did not see it in any way as a sacrifice. He was a commander in Operation Desert Storm. He was a leader of troops that went into Somalia and at a time was basically a humanitarian mission to deliver food to starving people, to rebuild roads, to stop warring factions by disarming them. And it was this kind of thing that made him feel alive and on purpose. It was his entire life. Even his wife, Nancy, is a Marine, or was a Marine. And so their friends were Marines. They lived, breathed, slept the Marines, right? You get the idea. He called himself a lifer. Until their son was born. And Ray says this, that my knees buckled when I saw our son, Patrick, for the very first time. I was love-struck. Patrick did not develop as most children do. He was diagnosed after a little while with cerebral palsy. And shortly after his diagnosis, Nancy had a mild stroke and was medically discharged from the Marines. Ray realized he had to shift his focus. A sadness would come over him when he was looking out the window and he would see the troops mobilizing for their next mission, a kind of nostalgic longing for what he loved. But he realized that something else was calling him and that his new life mission was his devotion to fatherhood. So Nancy and Ray both got jobs on opposing shifts so that they could give Patrick everything he needed, all the occupational therapy, all the physical therapy, all the care that it took to really help their son progress. And in time, he started speaking, and Ray was there on the day he began to take his first very slow, shaky, unsteady steps without the aid of a walker. So they never held him back either. They went on to have two more children, two daughters, and everything that the family did, all the activities, Patrick was not left behind. So even though he still needed a wheelchair to go more distance, they made it work. So one day, Ray and Patrick were out on a hike with a whole classroom full of 10-year-olds. And they came out of the woods and they came to this place where it was all water. And the teacher said, oh, I'm so sorry. I did not know there wasn't a bridge. And there was no way to get Patrick's wheeled, you know, across this water. So Ray began to look at it, and he noticed that there were these cement pillars all along the river's edge. And it reminded him of something. It reminded him of a confidence course he did as a Marine. And he immediately hoisted Patrick up on his shoulders, and he began to cross those pillars and said, come on, kids, we're going across on this mission. And he said about halfway through, Patrick started laughing. And his laughter echoed across the lake. And Ray said it was the sweetest sound he had ever heard. And in that moment, he thought, God had a plan for me all along. The Marines were just a part of it. And it was training for the most important duty of my life, to be a father. Ray's story can remind us that sometimes we might think we have to make some sacrifice in our life. But often when we do feel like there's something we're giving up, another door opens. That a part of one door closing, even though it may hurt us or make us sad, is an opening. Even a challenge that comes our way in life that we at the onset might say, "This there can't possibly be a blessing in here, right? This is terrible news," or whatever it is, however that initial reaction is, if we hold tight, if we trust, if we're willing to take that first step in and to meet whatever it is that is before us, we'll find those blessings begin to unfold. A sense of a bigger plan begins to unravel for us and to show itself. So whatever challenges might be present for you in your life right now, I want to encourage you to know and to consider how Ray reacted, to just meet what is before you and to have a sense of presence about it, to respond to it in love and see what unfolds for you from there. Spiritual growth is inevitable, isn't it? It's present in our lives no matter what. No matter whether we notice it or recognize it, no matter we see it in a blessing or an opportunity or a challenge, whatever it may be that is here for us. But it is here for us. I often quote Maya Angelou, who says, thank you, say thank you. No matter what happens, say thank you first. So let that be your first reaction. Thank you. And sometimes that's hard to do, right? But if we can find that in ourselves, it begins to stir and cultivate that foundation of faith and to help us then see the light and walk into it. So joy and fulfillment, purpose, it can all be a part of what opens up if we can get past that initial seeing of just a problem, just a block, just an issue before us. If we meet it with a devoted heart, like this father did, you never know what will happen. Beautiful connections, your heart breaking open, love struck, right? In whatever ways that might show up for you. Spiritual breakthroughs, a sense of purpose that might unfold for you. You won't know until you step in. Have you ever heard of Bobby Flay? Anybody know who that is? Oh, lots and lots of nods and hands. Okay, I apparently was not in the know until yesterday. I'm not a watcher of the Food Network. That's probably why. Because if you've heard of Bobby Flay, you might be somebody who tunes into his celebrity on the Food Network. He's an executive chef. He's an owner of several restaurants and franchises, and he's won lots of awards for his work on the Food Network as well. And we can thank his father for that. We can thank his father for cultivating his potential. We wouldn't have Bobby Flay the chef if we didn't have the father behind him. So let me tell you a little bit about his story. When Bobby was 17, he liked hanging out with his buddies on the street corner in the Upper East Side of Manhattan where he grew up. He said he just enjoyed shooting the breeze. He was a high school dropout, and all he really imagined for his life is exactly what he did every day, hang out with his friends on the corner and shoot the breeze. But somebody, he said, had other plans for me. So one day he was just hanging out in his house, watching TV, doing nothing much, and the phone rings, and it's his father. And he says, "Come to my office now, we need to talk about your life." That was pretty direct, right? So Bobby said, "I kind of feel like I'm going to the principal's office, and my dad's kind of scholarly, so I'm not really sure what this is, how this is going to play out, you know?" So he shows up at his dad's office, and his dad says, "Look, this is not a life. You need to get a job." And so he has Bobby promise that he's going to go look for a job. Well, Bobby didn't really look much for a job that day, but he did agree he would try. The next day, though, as it turns out, his father was a partner in a restaurant, and the busboy had to leave for 2 weeks, and they were in a scramble to try to fill the position. So his father calls and said, "Hey, I need you to fill in for the busboy just for 2 weeks." And he says, "And no special treatment. You just need to show up and do your job." So Bobby says, "Okay, I can do it." So he shows up, he does this, his 2 weeks are up, and he's wandering off outside the restaurant, and the chef pokes his head out and says, "Hey, Bobby, come here. Can you help me in the kitchen and wash some dishes and stock some things in the pantry?" So Bobby goes in, and then over time, pretty soon, he's introduced to using a knife and chopping a salad. And he's kind of interested in it, sort of. He'd maybe rather be hanging with his friends, but it's kind of interesting, and he's not minding getting a little money. And he said, "One day something just shifted for me. And I woke up and I opened my eyes and I looked at the ceiling and I went, oh my gosh, I'm excited to go to work today." Because he was beginning to develop some skill and it was engaging him. And he was beginning to wonder about what he might do. So his father and the partner, Joe, call him into the office that day or a few days later. And they say, "Hey, there's this new school opening up in New York, the French Culinary Institute. Do you think you'd like to go?" Well, he didn't really feel worthy, so he was having his own internal struggle. And they really encouraged him, so he decided to give it a try. He got his high school equivalency. He went. It was just like a six-month program, immersive program. And when he came out, he was so excited to go back to the restaurant and show off his skills, right? That same restaurant. So he walks in and he's like, "Okay, I'm ready. Can you put me to work?" And they say, "Get out of here. You don't have anything more to learn here." He's like, "Oh my goodness, what do I do now?" So that's when he went out pounding the pavement. He found a job. He got a job as a sous chef. He shows up on his first day of work, super proud of himself. He's on time. It's 8:00. Because a lot of times his dad would stand there and look at his watch when Bobby came in late, you know. So he comes in, and the staff is already in a tizzy. It's 8 a.m. in a restaurant, and the staff is scrambling around, and he says, "What's going on?" And they said that the head chef was found passed out in the kitchen drunk. "Can you be our head chef?" And nervous as he was, yeah, instant promotion. He became the head chef of that restaurant, and really the rest is history. He fell in love. It just, those steps pushed him toward his passion for food, and he fell in love with that work and now owns many restaurants and so on. His first restaurant, he asked his dad to go look for a property with him, and then another restaurant owner asked Bobby to go into partnership, and his dad was really relieved and just said, "Let's just be father and son. You go partner with that guy." And so today, he does these amazing giving back kinds of things. He goes to the vocational high school in Queens, and he teaches these young people, he shares his passion for cooking, and he teaches and mentors them. And he says, these kids, he goes, "So many of them are just like I was, directionless, insecure, feeling unworthy, having not a clue about what they want to do in their lives." And that same French Culinary Institute that Bobby got his start at gives scholarships to some of these kids. So you see that beautiful cycle of prosperity, that multiplying prosperity that happens when one person gives us a nudge, when one person mentors us, says, I see the potential in you. And then we are able to kind of get on board with it slowly but surely. Maybe I do have something to offer. And it doesn't always have to be a person outside of us. I mean, I think that's really the beauty of this story, is that Bobby's father really acts very much like the innate divinity within us. That's the good news. Because I know a lot of us, when it comes around to Father's Day, maybe feel kind of sad, like we didn't have a father present in our lives, or we didn't have a kind of positive influence in our fathers. And yet, here's the good news, we all have it within us. We all have that innate kind of father energy that is there for us, cheerleading and goading us on, encouraging us, nudging us, sometimes giving us really clear direction, right? And so sometimes it's sort of hands off and it's like, you know, make your own choices, make your own decisions. I'm kind of here. I'm stepping back. I'm a presence that is watching over. I am a presence that is in you. I am a presence that is around you, and you must make your own choices. But that is available to us. That energy, that power is available to us. We all have an ideal inner father, a wise and loving constant presence. It is our conscience and our consciousness. It is the great I am of our being. It is the wisdom that is available to us, the insight, the innate knowing. It is the devotional love that is also in us. And we all have that same gift. Do you know that God, the very essence of the universe, loves you? That you are loved purely, completely, unconditionally. Do you feel that? Sometimes, masa menas, sometimes not, right? But yet it's there, right? It's there for us always. It's always there for us. It's about us opening our hearts. It's about us trying on the possibility. Like Bobby in that moment when he felt like he had this golden opportunity in front of him, but maybe I'm not worthy of it. We have this love for us, always available to us. And maybe there's a little bit of feeling of I'm not worthy that doesn't allow us to put our arms around it or to open our arms to receive it or to allow it to flow through us. And yet it is there for us. And yet we are loved so deeply, so unconditionally. No strings. Nothing you got to do. No fancy dances you got to do for the divine. You are just loved because you are. It's powerful knowing, isn't it? And to receive it, ah, what bliss. God rallies for our every need, for our every desire, for our every hope, for our every dream, for our every joy to be realized. It's an energy. It's not a person. It's an energy, but it's embodied in people, right? It's embodied in the resources of our lives. It's embodied in our dogs. You know, I've just suddenly popped in. The craziest things pop in the middle of my talking to you all. A little plaque I gave Brenly that says, I want to be the person my dog thinks I am. It's kind of the same, right? I want to be the person my God thinks I am. Dog and God, you know, you can flip them back and forth, right? Jeremiah 1 says this, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. And both Luke and Matthew, this is so intriguing to me, that two canonized gospels say the same slightly bizarre but amazing thing, that even the hairs on your head are numbered. Now, there are like 7 billion plus of us, and even the hairs on our head are known deeply and intimately by this being that loves us beyond measure, this presence, this principle, this entity, this existence. It doesn't matter whether you have curly hair or kinky hair or straight hair or dark hair or red hair or blonde hair or white hair or gray hair. It doesn't matter whether you have any hair, really, thick or thin or none at all. Every hair is known. Wow. That is some love. That is some attention. That is some devotion that we have available to us. The divine sees our potential, loves us with this devotion, and sees our potential, holds a space, but already sees us fully realized as divine beings, already sees us in our fullest manifestation. The vision of who we are in our truth as that I am an expression is already seen by the universal entity that is our first principle. God is the isness, the allness of God. It's already known. It's like a blueprint already there for us, a devotional love already available to us. All it takes is us waking up to it, right? Seems like a small thing, doesn't it, when I say it that way? In a way, though, it is. In a way, though, it is a simpleness of just tuning in and waking up and allowing, and maybe removing some of the stuff that's in the way, and just saying, let me just try it. Let me just try to open my heart and my mind to the possibility that I am loved and paid attention to at this level of detail and devotion and intimacy. Maybe it's possible that there is this allness of the universe that when it beholds me, it is love-struck and speechless, like Ray was when he saw his son Patrick for the first time, this big, tough Marine. Love struck, speechless you are in the eyes of your God. I just invite you to say that to yourself. I am love, my God is love struck and speechless when God beholds me. Do you allow yourself to be guided? Do you allow yourself to be nudged? And do you allow those insights to arise within you and you follow them? Do you give credence to that wisdom that is in you, that is available to you, that can help you realize the potential knowing of all of this, the potential expression of all of these truths? So today we honor this divine inner Father energy that recognizes our potential, that sees us already as realized, and that loves us beyond measure. And no matter what it is that is stirring in our lives, a dream, a hope, a health challenge, a relationship risk, whatever it is that is there for us, we are fully 100% plus supported. And everything is there for us to say yes, to step in, to follow the nudge, to follow the urge, to say yes to the insight, to say yes, I've got this inside of me. And I am saying yes to it, and I'm following it, and I'm trusting it, and I'm stepping in. It helps to remember that this divine presence loves us and guides us and sees us already manifested in our potential. It helps me. I hope it helps you to remember these things. When I was in ministerial school, there was a fatherly figure. As I say it, I recognize that a lot of the faculty when I was in ministerial school kind of had that sort of energy. But Tom Thorpe was one of the faculty members, and he said something that echoes in my mind a lot still today. He said, "This is all you've got to do." I kind of like that when everything gets pared down to, here it is, here's the bottom line. Here's the pithy wisdom to take with you. This is all you have to do. Show up, pay attention, respond in love. That has guided me so much through ministry and through life. I think it's the best advice I've ever been given. Show up, pay attention, respond in love. That's it. Done. Yes, 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 we can do this. And just to remember, to allow ourselves to feel it, to allow ourselves to know that the allness of God sees us already in the fullness of who we are in our expression. And Our beingness, exactly as we are, is perfect and whole. We are healthy and well in that trueness of our I am nature. That's where we center, right? I am healthy. I am well. I am fulfilled. I am already accomplished. I am exactly where I want to be and perfect exactly as I am. So what is ours to do from here? Say it with me. Show up, pay attention, respond in love. Let's say our full affirmation together. My potential is manifested in the eyes of the divine. I show up, pay attention, and respond in love. And so it is. Happy Father's Day.